Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Abby.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay.
I'm glad to be back for another discussion.
This one's a doozy. So we're recording this post Billboard Women in Music. So this is going to be a opinionated discussion about Taylor Swift and Scooter Braun.
Yeah, it's going to be like no holding back. Because, you know, that's the idea of what we want to achieve here is where we just openly talk about our opinions and people are free to agree or disagree. But I think we should like go into the backstory a little bit and also include our own biases.
We can deep dive into the whole situation.
We'll get a timeline going.
Yeah.
It all started in 1989 when Taylor Swift was born.
December 13th, 1989. So Taylor Swift turned 30 yesterday.
Woohoo. Thirtay,
which, yeah, I saw that.
Which is a little cute, little cringe.
So if you've been living under a rock, you won't know that Taylor Swift and Scooter Braun hate each other.
Yeah. I just want to start by saying that Scooter's always been inexplicably tied to Justin. So right. I've always loved Scooter. I've always seen him as an inspiration in the music industry. You know, first and foremost, he was kind of like a failure. He was going to drop out of he did drop out of college, and his parents were like really disappointed in him. And then, you know, he was like, okay, well, I just signed this kid from Canada, so we'll see what happens. And obviously, here we are. And he's built a huge company, a very successful company. He manages plenty of people, including Ariana Grande. And he did manage Kanye West at one point and kind of went on and off with him a little bit because Kanye's own mental health went a little bit on and off. So at the same time, I love Taylor Swift, and I was so happy loving her until the end of June this year when
Me came out?
No. I'm saying when the whole thing with Scooter started.
Oh.
Me came out in April.
Oh.
That was like, questionable. And then when this happened, I was like, all right, that's it. So
I'm looking up an official timeline just to make sure that.
Yeah, I think I know it in my brain.
I think I know it. Right. So basically, it started back, in June.
Yeah.
There were negotiations between Scooter Braun and his company.
So, yeah, his company, Ithaca Holdings, it was announced on the morning of, like, I think it was just sometime in the end of June. I remember it was the Pride Parade in New York. That's how I remember it. But, yeah, so it was announced that he had acquired a Big Machine label group, which Taylor has been had been signed to since 2006, and she put out her first six albums on this label, and they basically grew together.
Right.
Like, as Taylor got bigger, Big Machine got bigger, and vice versa.
Well, Big Machine is known for being a country label.
Yes, it's based in Nashville. They have a lot of country artists on their roster, including, we just looked some up.
They have Brett Young, Florida Georgia Line. I'm looking at their current roster right now. Lady Antebellum.
A lot of big country artists.
Right, they had Sheryl Crow at one point. They have Rascal Flatts, Reba. They still have Sheryl Crow. She's right there. Thomas Rhett is big right now.
Yeah.
So they have a lot of very well-known artists that are the country lane, and a lot of them have somewhat transitioned to pop around the same time Taylor was transitioning to pop.
Yeah, but Taylor pretty much transitioned in the biggest way. Like, it's weird to think that Reputation was an album that was released on Big Machine because, like, it has a song with Future on it.
Right.
Shouts to Endgame. Yeah, so Taylor's contract with Big Machine ended in, like, 2018.
Yeah, I was going to say 2018.
Yeah, and there were a lot of headlines throughout the industry. Who is Taylor going to sign with? You know, she's, like, up for grabs, kind of like a free agent. And
she signed with Republic.
She ended up signing with Republic. It was kind of a monumental deal because
it was one of the biggest record deals in history.
Yeah, they were allowing her to own her masters, which we will get into, I'm sure. And also, she the contract stipulated that if she signed with them, then any money that Universal Music Group, the biggest label in the world, makes from sales of their Spotify shares would be paid out to the artist non-recoupable, which is a lot of fancy words, but it basically means that artists are going to get paid money that they deserve and wouldn't necessarily have if Taylor didn't kind of fight for that in her contract.
It mimics the deal that Sony went through earlier last year, where they had the something similar where they paid out. It wasn't just to Sony artists, though. They sold some of the shares of Spotify, and they paid out to artists that had been on their label and current artists. So people that have left, they paid out to them, too.
Yeah, I don't know if that counts in Taylor's case. It might. Right. I don't know.
It probably will because it was in their catalog.
But, I mean, that's so many artists.
But another thing that's really interesting is that Ariana Grande is on Republic.
Yes, she is.
Her manager, Scooter Braun.
Yes, he is.
So I just wanted to make a little triangle.
I mean,
there.
That's the thing. They say that the industry is very small, and especially when you get to that kind of upper echelon of huge artists. So Republic Records, like, again, for people who don't know, is, like, the biggest record label right now, like, in the world.
It's Republic, Atlantic, and RCA on the majors.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, anything on a major label is, like, you're going to have a big artist everywhere. Yeah. But I mean, a label that has Drake and Post Malone and Ariana Grande and The Weeknd and Taylor Swift is pretty hard to compete with. A lot of artists have imprints under Republic.
Which is what Taylor did. So when you go on Spotify, you look at her music, it doesn't say, well, it says, like, it says her company. And then it'll say
Taylor Swift Productions or something.
And then it'll say, let me look it up so I get it correct.
Yeah, it's basically the copyright information.
Right. So when you go, you click on Taylor. Yeah, no, I'm on Spotify.
It's just CNP Taylor Swift.
Right.
2019. That's Lover.
Some of the other artists, if you do the same thing, you go look at what theirs is, it'll show their imprint.
Yeah.
Like under exclusive license to
Here's a great example. I just clicked on The Weeknd. So he has The Weeknd XO Inc., manufactured and marketed by Republic Records, a division of UMG Recordings Inc. So it's like a Russian nesting doll of labels.
Right.
But that's how it works. You know, that's just like a practice that's been going on since the industry started.
Right.
So that's kind of the situation that Taylor is in now.
So just a note with everything is that Taylor is not the only artist whose catalog was sold.
Right, exactly. There are all these other artists.
It's Lydia Antebellum. It's anyone that is big, Florida Georgia Line, Sheryl Crow, anyone that put music out on Big Machine. The catalog title is 18 months and after a release, it goes into what is considered catalog.
Right.
Which means it's no longer part of an album cycle. It's no longer part of a tour. It is there. It can be used in publishing. It can be used for sync, licensing, whatever. But it's not an active album cycle. So anyone whose music was on Big Machine before this sale is now catalog.
Yeah. And I think something else important that is going to be funny to talk about, but I feel like we should make a distinction right now, is what we mean when we say a master recording.
Oh, yeah.
So
there's two parts to
a copyright.
You want to
say the famous? Okay, you beat me to it. Yeah. So there's two parts to a copyright. They've drilled that into our heads here in the wonderful, wonderful Drexel Music Industry Program.
Yeah.
So basically, there's the song and then there's the recording. So the song consists of the composition, the lyrics, what would be
sound
on sheet music.
Think sound.
Yeah. And then the master recording is
the technical part.
The actual part that was like somebody hit record and then it was like, here's a flash drive with this song.
Right.
So a good way to think of it is like a cover song. So if I'm signed to Republic and I cover Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree, Brenda Lee owns that part of the composition always, because she always will be the one who wrote that song. But my record label is the one who owns that master.
Right.
So a song, one composition can have multiple
owners, quote unquote, and masters. Yeah.
So it's important to make that distinction. And Miss Taylor Swift basically writes all of her own songs.
So she owns
so
the
music.
So she
owns all of her compositions, but didn't own her masters.
Well, I think
which
it's...
It's
important to say that most artists don't own their masters, because when you sign a record deal with a label, they front you money to make your record.
Yeah.
So it's in advance is what it's called. And they give you a sum of money that they predict you negotiate will cover the cost of making this record. So then there's a recoupable... I don't know if I want to go into this, but basically when you do that, they'll say a certain number you have to give back to them to recoup or to make up for
the money
they gave
out. Yeah, you basically owe
them
because they invested in you. I mean, like 99% of the artists that major labels sign don't go anywhere. Their money is their music is not ever going to be profitable.
Right.
It's only the 1%, like your Taylor Swifts and your Ariana Grandes and your Drakes, who make that money back for you to be a sustainable business.
Right.
So they're taking a risk on you. Right now, it's like to invest in Taylor Swift, that's no risk. She's Taylor Swift. But in 2006,
it was a huge
risk.
She was
a nobody.
She was no
one. And it's a huge risk. So in return for taking a chance on her, they own her masters. And that is how 99% of it works. There are some very few artists who do own their masters.
You have to be completely independent and fund your own project on your own.
Which is definitely, it's happening more now with like aggregators like CD Baby and DistroKid.
Right.
But still, if you look at, you know, the Billboard Hot 100, for example, and you look at all of those people who are on there, all the names that are popping up, I guarantee you most of them don't own their masters because they're signed to record deals. So their record label, whether indie
I was
or
gonna say,
major.
Even independent record labels front you. We did it. We have a record label at Drexel called Mad Dragon. We give advances so that our artists can make their money. They end up owning their masters because this is an educational program. So technically, Mad Dragon doesn't own any masters.
Right, but we've both worked at indie labels before, and we know that's how it works. Like, you know, they might give you a bigger portion of your royalties. Like, I know in a lot of cases, like with a major label deal, it's like 90-10 in favor of the label with royalties.
Right.
But for a lot of indies, it's like 50-50.
A lot of indies, it's 50-50. But that's also because the way that major labels work is they have all these different streams of revenue that they're providing for you as well. So they will go and get you a tour with Live Nation.
Right.
They will go
and a brand partnership maybe.
Right. And they will go and they have licensing departments that will get your music in commercials.
Right.
And they have all of these things where independent labels don't necessarily have all of those things. So they give you a bigger cut because they know that they can provide you with enough, but not as much as you
And it's giving you and your team more money to maybe hire an outside person to do all of those things. So that's just a little quick lesson in the music industry.
Right.
But anyways, back to kind of like the specifics of the whole Taylor and Scooter thing is that after it was announced, like we said, late June, that Scooter's company, Ithaca Holdings, had acquired Big Machine's catalog. Shortly after that, Taylor posted on her Tumblr and everywhere else, which is just funny.
It blows my mind
in and of itself
that she still uses Tumblr.
Yeah, it's really funny. I mean, she has her reasons, but it's really funny.
Yeah.
And anyway, so she posted, you know, this whole thing about how she was upset over this for a number of reasons. To me, they seem mostly personal because, like I said, Scooter did manage Kanye on and off for a while there, and obviously we don't have to get into Taylor and Kanye because literally everybody, even if you do live under a rock, knows how that went down.
Right.
And so Taylor and Kanye do not like each other, to make a long story short, and so I guess she was going off of that as saying, you know, the friend of my enemy is my enemy.
My enemy, yeah.
And also in the original post, you know, she posted a picture of Justin FaceTiming Kanye and Scooter that Justin posted on Instagram years ago, and the caption was, "Taylor Swift, what up?" Which, yeah, was totally immature on Justin's part, but, like, it's,
but
like,
it was in, what, 2012? Like, at this point?
I mean, it was, like, yeah, it was a while. I don't remember what year, but it was, like, a while ago. It was, like, also, Justin and Taylor used to be friends. Like, look up Justin punking Taylor.
Yeah.
So cute. They were so cute. But obviously, you got to stick with your girlfriend in a breakup when you're friends with the girl and the guy and they break up. So she, you know, stuck with Selena. Respect. Right. You know, we're girls. We would do that, I guess.
Yeah. And I don't think I don't think the Justin part was probably part of it.
Yeah.
I think it's more the way that Scooter was involved in the business and the way that her and Kanye went through things. And it's just a lot. And she's a very outspoken person. And
right,
so
which is fine.
I think that she blew this out of proportion because she wanted to use it as, she needed a soapbox.
Yeah.
And this is her cause.
Yeah.
Because she'd been criticized in the past for being too political on certain things.
Not political enough
on other
things.
Yeah,
people have a slew of complaints about her.
Right, and so this is one thing that people are... She's saying, I know about this. I know what I'm doing. This is it. So
right,
there have been other sources in the whole thing saying, you know, her father was on the board of directors at Big Machine.
Mm-hmm.
Her father was apparently supposed to be in the room when these negotiations went down.
Right, because he's supposed to be involved with the label.
Because he's supposed to be involved, but he wasn't in the room when these things went down. There's some skepticism about why he wasn't in the room when these things went down. If it was on purpose because there's a personal connection and he wouldn't have been a third party.
Yeah. There's a lot of moving pieces.
A lot of moving pieces.
It's such a nuanced issue. It really, really is. And the worst part of it all is that people want to simplify it. You know, like, my Twitter timeline alone is, like, a great example. I followed Justin stans and Taylor stans.
Right.
And when this was going on and every time, you know, another fire is sparked in this whole thing, it's like, you know, all the Justin fans are like, Taylor sucks, she's trash, garbage. And all the Taylor fans are like, Justin and Scooter are trash, garbage, fuck them, we hate them.
But it's more than just...
It's so nuanced. It's not black and white.
No.
They both have faults and, you know, things they do right. Like, all of us.
They're human. But I think that one of the worst ways that this was handled was how it was on social media.
Yeah.
Is that for sure. Everything that went down was put on social media, and you can't capture this type of issue in 260 characters that Twitter gives you. You can't capture it in a notes screenshot.
There was a lot of notes
on
app going
Instagram.
Around.
Instagram. You can't do any of that because it's so much more difficult. And
it's a complex business deal at the end of the day.
Right, at the end of the day. And this is definitely going to be, if we were still in classes about business law and business
contracts.
And stuff like that, which we took last year and the year before.
Mm-hmm.
If we were still in those classes, this would be a case study that we'd be looking at right now.
Yeah, I'm sure they're teaching it.
It is such a complex situation, especially with all the people that are involved. So the big players in this, I feel like we should just kind of clarify. Big Machine Label Group,
mm-hmm.
The Carlyle Group, which is an investment firm that owns Scooter Braun's company.
Ithaca Holdings. Right. Okay.
So the Carlyle Group is a private equity company firm.
Yeah.
She keeps calling out the Carlyle Group.
Yeah, and private equity.
And private equity.
In general.
And
which goes beyond music.
I just don't think that she understands how that works because in this Billboard video, saw the video, we weren't there.
Yeah.
She talks about private equity and what an issue private equity is.
Yeah, she basically put it on par with, like, streaming and how, like, streaming is directly applicable to the music industry, and private equity is kind of, but...
But I just wanted less to tell her that's how capitalism works.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of capitalism, but that is how it works.
And if there wasn't capitalism, girl, you better believe that you would not have as much money that you have. Like,
that's true.
Honestly.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
That part got me a little bit.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Right. And she's calling out this equity firm. If you're going to
be a socialist, you got to be full socialist.
You got to be more left than Bernie Sanders, man. I don't know. So the other thing is that she's calling out Scott Borchetta, however you say his name.
He founded Big Machine.
By the way,
everyone, every man in this story is named Scott. Taylor's dad is named Scott. Scooter's real name is Scott. Scott Borchetta, so it gets really confusing.
It's like the tale of Scott.
So you got to say Scooter, Scott Borchetta, and Taylor's dad. Those are the three distinctions.
So she's calling him out for saying that he personally told her team that she's not allowed to do anything with her music. So she had a whole campaign on Twitter. I'm reading from like her notes app, basically, of her saying, I'm not allowed to perform for this award for the Billboard.
No, the AMAs.
It was the AMAs?
Yeah. So she was honored. Oh, the AMAs is
Artist of the Decade.
So she wanted to perform a medley of her hits from the decade. And they were trying to stop her.
So the truth of that is the only reason they wanted to stop her was because she was making such a big deal about the whole situation.
Yeah. They literally said, we'll let you perform whatever you want if you promise to not keep talking about us and also to not re-record, because that's the other thing, is that she threatened to re-record. Taylor's original post on Tumblr in June of this year, she was saying that she never had a chance to buy her masters for her first six albums. She said that she was only offered a chance to earn them back, which means for every album she turned in, she would get another album back, basically. So when she turned in Lover, theoretically, she would own the masters for Taylor Swift, the self-titled album, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Which obviously takes much longer than just buying
them. Right, right.
Meanwhile, shortly after that, Big Machine, basically Scott Borchetta, released a statement saying the reverse, that they did offer her. So, like, again, these agreements are confidential. It's a great point.
Mm-hmm.
That means we actually don't know what was offered. And also, that wasn't even a deal. Those were negotiations.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's even more confusing. And I think someone's lying, but I don't know who.
Yeah, I also think someone's lying.
I think we do not have all the facts, but I have no clue.
But I also don't think Taylor has all the facts either. And she's presenting that she does.
Right.
And her other big point is that, you know, there were no women were involved. She wasn't involved. But the thing is when you do these negotiations, you have a team that does negotations for you when you're Taylor Swift.
A lawyer, yeah. Absolutely.
You have a lawyer going in and doing negotiations. Absolutely. You should not personally be involved in those negotiations because it takes the integrity out of it, basically. When you're involved, you're emotional. You value yourself.
Right, of course, you're as high as you tied. Can. Yeah.
So they don't want you in the room.
Right, right.
So when she's saying I wasn't in the room, my team wasn't in the room, my representatives, whatever.
Yeah.
Someone from her camp was there. Yeah. You can't have a one-sided negotiation. Right. That's not how it works.
Right.
But I do think that there are really, really discrete things going on. That's how the industry works.
Right, exactly. And we like can't sit here and say, okay, well, here's what really happened. So like, here are the facts. So this is who we're siding with. No, we do not know what's going on. All these stans just blindly follow what their fave tells them to do. Taylor's like, everyone, beg them to let me sing. Well, and so they beg.
And then she says to go let Scooter know a piece of their mind. Exactly. Or something like that. She
sicked her fans on them.
But the thing is, you're a 30-year-old woman.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's not be on the playground and go tattle on our friends, you know?
And I mean, the thing is, like, even if she didn't say that, they still would have attacked him. But still, it doesn't matter. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, so basically, like, but then it's the same thing. Like, I've been on Justin Bieber stan Twitter my whole life, and it's basically Scooter Braun stan Twitter. They basically go hand in hand. And it's the same thing. It's just blind support. And that's just not good. I can't stress enough how much I love them both. It's like your parents fighting or something. Not really. But it's like, you're not gonna hear me say this is whose side I'm taking. Because it's so nuanced and it's so complex. Right. I see both of their points. And I see, you know, where they've both done some things that are wrong. Like I said, like Justin posting that mean thing about Taylor, like when he was FaceTiming Kanye.
Right.
Mean. I love him with all my heart, but I can sit here and tell you that that was probably mean. And Justin's done a lot of mean stuff. So have I. So has everyone. We're human. So.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm never gonna take a side. I mean, I guess I can't say I'll never take a side. Maybe one day something like actual receipts will be revealed. But right. Like, as of right now, like, I'm not gonna take a side because I do love them both. And I don't know. I feel like I'm able to separate this from everything else. Like, mm-hmm. in the speech that, like, hopefully we're going to get to talking about that she gave at the Billboard Women in Music event, she made so many wonderful points. I was, like, tears
she
in my
did.
Eyes.
She did.
She is amazing. She is a hero in this industry. She deserves right. all these decade-end awards that she's
no,
getting.
No, she definitely does, but...
This is just one
little
of
thing
it that we've talked about for a really long
but
time.
But she also keeps bringing it up.
Yeah.
And I think that's what disappointed me so much about this Woman of the Decade
right.
speech.
It doesn't really have anything to do with gender inequality in the music industry. She just kind of spun it so that it did, so she could
right.
talk about
so it. Right. So the gist of her speech is that the industry is male dominated, which honestly we've been known.
WBK.
Yeah. We've been known. But to be honest, it's changing so much.
Yeah. Even when there are more women, they still aren't necessarily treated with the same amount of respect, which is like another point Taylor was making.
Right.
That, you know, we've all, I feel like every woman's experienced this, like you're in a meeting and you say something and a man says it louder and he gets the credit. Like
right.
that does still happen. So it's like, even if there are more women in the room, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're being respected the same way. That's not really something you can measure. You know, that's not like,
yeah,
like
what, I will say
it is improving. I mean, in general, like gender disparity in general is improving. It's not,
yeah,
it's not like the issue is over. I mean, but we're getting there, which is good.
Stats, women in music. Oh, it says it's about 70-30. It used to be worse, though.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
It used to be so much worse.
No, I read a book about a woman who was in, like, A&R at Atlantic in, like, the 80s, and it was a literal sausage party. Like, she was
yeah.
the only woman besides, like, one assistant who, like, was a secretary basically answering phone calls. So it absolutely has gotten better.
Right.
Because in part of things like Billboard Women in Music, which are
yeah.
supposed to like honor music and honor music, listen to me, honor women in music and uphold them.
Right.
And obviously artists have been a part of,
well,
you know,
and I think for me, it's
like
a big, it was a big deal when Sylvia Rhone got named chairwoman.
Yeah.
Chairwoman of Epic Records.
Absolutely. Sylvia Rhone is a legend.
Right. So just
her.
Having that is a really big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's so many more women in the industry that are at her status. And I think it's changing a lot. So that's one thing that Taylor was talking about, how it's all men
right.
and it's all these men making decisions, but there really are, when I look around like my office at work,
yeah, absolutely,
there's a lot of women.
Me too. Yeah,
so many women.
Yeah,
and it makes me happy that it's changing in the way it is.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's wonderful. But I think also, you know, she wasn't just being honored as Women of the Year, which she has gotten twice, but she was being honored as Woman of the Decade. So
right.
she was going back to when it was different even just 10 years ago.
Right. Us growing
really
up.
Different. Yeah.
I think growing up in the way that we have in this industry, even the past 4 years.
Oh,
that
I was
going to
say,
been,
when did the Me Too movement start?
Right. Even in the
pretty
last
recently,
4 years
like,
that we've
yeah.
been in the industry, a lot of things have changed. I
exactly.
think, I think a lot of women speaking out, I'm going to name drop Kesha right there.
Yes.
Like,
great
she's
example.
One of the strongest women in this music industry
we love
that,
her.
Right. And I was a little bit disappointed when she wasn't, like, name-dropped, I guess, with... Because she... I guess
Taylor?
She... Taylor was name-dropping newer people that
yeah,
aren't really
yeah,
new.
Yeah, exactly. But
like,
she said, and many more artists,
I guess,
so.
Yeah. But I'm just thinking
she was
of,
already talking for a while, so...
Right. So,
sure was,
so I think we should dive in... We'll dive into the speech.
Yeah.
A little bit more.
Because, yeah, it's the latest installment in Taylor versus Scooter, but also she brought up a lot of other really important points.
So let's get to it. So let's get to it.
She starts with talking about the decade began when she was 20,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of crazy because
yeah.
she started when she was 16.
Yeah.
So she was already a few albums in.
Yeah, I mean, Fearless was her breakthrough album, and that came out in 2008, and some of the really big hits, you know.
Right.
Like, went you know, top five and everything.
Love Story, You Belong With
2009.
Me.
So that's right. Technically not this decade, but she basically started this decade coming off a really successful album.
Right.
Fearless.
Yeah. And so she goes on to talk about how she was criticized all the time. Like,
right.
Criticized constantly. She wrote songs about it, like Mean, Shake It Off, Blank Space. We know.
Which was her response to the criticism.
Right. And we know that those are all specifically pointed at certain people.
Yeah.
And then she's talking about how, you know, she was being criticized for dating too much. And then she went on that break before she met, like, her current boyfriend.
Yeah.
And then she wasn't dating for, what, like, yeah, 2 or 3 years?
Also, like, all of 1989 was about, like, Girl Squad. We
right.
don't need no man. And, like,
exactly.
That's great. But then people were annoyed with the Girl Squad. They were
right.
like, oh,
so
you're
then,
so annoying with your Girl Squad. So,
she's posting pictures with Selena all the time.
Damn if she doesn't, basically.
Right.
She couldn't do anything right, so she kind of disappeared. And then we got Reputation, which is one of the best albums of the decade.
Right, and I think it's really interesting that she has been criticized for all of that when there are men that have done this similar
right.
thing.
She gave, you know, the great example of, like, no one is saying that Ed Sheeran or Bruno Mars are, like, serial daters.
Right.
Who, like, are crazy and
well and you would think that like
they'll write a song about you
right exactly and even like John Mayer who's been around for how long every album is about another person
yep
and I love him he's one of my favorites I'm
right.
never gonna steer him wrong but you know he dipped into the Taylor Swift pool a little bit too
that he did
so
also gave us some great songs
right so it's just kind of all of that and
yeah, I mean, that is, like, such a valid
The man
point.
On Lover is about all of that.
Exactly. That was basically, like,
it's about,
the culmination of everything.
Right. The man is about how she is a businesswoman and how she was sitting in a boardroom. Like, no one questioned her if she was a man. Also, if she was dating, no one would question it. And
right.
honestly, yeah. I mean, everyone is so enthralled with, I'm going to drop another one of my favorites, Harry Styles. Everyone wants to know who his song Cherry is about.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, there's a screen or a voice recording in the back at the end of like some
oh.
French woman. And everyone
oh.
was on Twitter like, who is this about? Blah,
right.
blah, blah. But he's not being criticized for having dated how many people, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And like he hosted earlier in the week James Corden's show.
Right.
And Kendall Jenner was on it with him.
Right.
And so.
Like imagine if Taylor did that.
Right.
It would be like everyone would be like. Up
right.
in arms about it.
Yeah.
It would make news and, like, all this shit. I mean,
so,
yeah, that's how it's always been. Like, I remember it really well at the 2013 Billboard Music Awards. I remember it like it was yesterday.
Oh, my God.
It was a very monumental moment in my life, personally. So whoever was hosting was, like, cracked some joke about... Don't
was it LL Cool J?
It was...
He hosts everything.
He hosted the Grammys for a few years. That's what
yeah.
I'm thinking of him. I don't know. It was some other dude, and he was like... Whatever, be careful, don't stand next to Taylor Swift, she'll write a song about you.
Right.
And she just made this face, obviously this is an audio format, but she made this face that was just totally iconic. She was just like,
yeah.
she just kind of shrugged and was like, what are you going to do? All in like one look. But you could just tell in that moment, like she was fucking done.
Yeah,
she was
as
done.
She should have
And
been.
That was 2013, so she was probably busy writing 1989 at that time, which would come out in 2014, and Blank Space is literally her being like, you want me to be crazy? I'll be crazy. And
exactly.
She's supposed to be crazy. Love Blank Space. I thought it was such a great way to respond to the
great
haters.
Music video.
Great.
Fantastic music video.
Her second best music video after Look What You Made Me Do.
Oh,
which
yes.
Which is
yes.
also a response to the haters in a different way.
Right. So
she's done it all.
She's done it all. She goes in during the speech to talk about how strong women are, which I really liked. She says,
yes.
Women in music, on stage or behind the scenes, are not allowed to coast. We are held at a higher, sometimes impossible feeling standard, and it seems that my fellow female artists have taken this challenge, they've accepted it. Which I really liked that line.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really great sentiment to women and how a lot of the times women have to work harder, and I mean, you and I have experienced that even in college where
absolutely
we Nicole and I in class will talk about Taylor Swift, and everyone in the room kind of rolls their eyes and groans and doesn't want to hear us talk. And it feels more about we're talking about a female. We are females.
Right.
We're talking about Taylor Swift in general, who is groundbreaking
and outspoken.
Outspoken. And then we are given this, oh, they're at it again.
Yeah.
And it's come to the point where we just don't really care.
Oh, yeah. No, I do not give a shit.
But it feels like a little, it's a microcosm for what she experiences.
Exactly. Yeah. Obviously, we're like on a smaller scale. But yeah, I mean, I remember thinking once that I was in my rock history class and we were learning about how some hippies or whatever, like, chewed on the corner of their Grateful Dead albums because there was a rumor that they had LSD on the corner.
Yeah.
And I was like, but they say I'm crazy for talking about Taylor Swift.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So I just always thought that was a really great example. And, you know, also the same thing with, like, sports. I think, you know, they say, like, little teenage girls are annoying because they scream and cry over, you know, their favorite teeny bopper. But
when
a guy's sports team loses, he's allowed to break the TV. No questions asked.
I was going to say, were you in Philadelphia when the Eagles won?
Chaos. Yeah.
When they won. I watched them flip a Prius.
I mean,
on Broad Street.
Like, if I did that over Justin Bieber, and I have wanted to,
right,
I would be taken away to, you know, a mental hospital. Like,
Eastern State.
Yeah, they would think I was crazy. I am a little crazy, but, like, that's
all
just as crazy. So
yeah,
that is another form of sexism we've experienced.
Yeah.
So
and
thank
so,
you, Taylor, for speaking up.
And she says that, and she talks about how we need to keep advocating for women in record studios, behind the mixing board, and A&R meetings, because rather than fighting to be taken seriously in their fields, these women are struggling to even have a chance to be in the room, which I completely understand and agree with, having worked in a major label, well, interned in a major label, I won't say worked. I get it. I completely understand a lot of the people that are in these discussions from negotiations are women, but they're mostly men.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell that they, luckily, okay, I will give Sony one thing. They do have really, really good equality levels. So,
that's good.
Like, the head of A&R at RCA is a woman. And the head of A&R admin at RCA and I had a conversation, and I said to her, you know, it's really great that there's so many women in this office. And she said, you know, it wasn't like this when I started.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason she had the conversation with me was because she wants to spread positivity and the drive that she has to other young women.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So in the transcript I'm reading on billboard.com, I can put it in the show notes so that if you want to read it, you can. I'll put the link to the video from Billboard as well.
Mm-hmm.
She talks about the revenue flow for creators and songwriters, and that she thinks that record contracts and producer agreements haven't fully caught up, which I find very interesting.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because the world of streaming is so odd.
Yeah.
We're using royalty. The way the royalty structure is wrong for streaming. And there have been people in D.C. lobbying for another digital copyright act to go through to fix it. Because the last one was very long ago. And things
it's about
changed.
As old as us.
Right. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act was enacted in 2000.
And it's got those tricky little safe harbors that
it
let
does.
YouTube screw us all over.
It does. And so I think that she's right in that. And I think that it's not just the record contracts and producer agreements. It's the way that the industry is structured right now and the regulations that are put in place. And we have some people in D.C. that are lobbying to change it, which I think is good, but it's not. I mean, D.C.'s got a lot going on right now.
Exactly. And I mean, the music industry, again, it's notoriously like bad at catching up with technology. Like,
right.
Taylor even said it. She was like, music is always walking hand in hand with technology.
Right.
Which is, like, theoretically true, but
it's more like
we are slow to catch up.
It's more like technology is leading the blind.
Yeah,
of
technology's
the music
like, come on. And the music industry's like, I'll be there in a second. We're just going to keep selling CDs real quick for a second.
We're going to bring back vinyl for a hot sec
and
then we'll talk to you.
And the industry is going to go down by half in its value, and then we'll be there.
And then we'll be there.
Yeah, and so, but also at the same time, the government has a reputation for being very, very, very slow also. So just in general, it kind of seems like it's going to take a while, which is why it is so great that people like Taylor are speaking up and, you know, talking about how these things need to change. She's saying, like, I think these things do need to change, which is absolutely true. I mean, yeah, absolutely. There are so many, you know, standard boilerplate, like, stipulations in contracts, like she said, like, recording, like, record deals, but also, like, production contracts that are outdated and need to be updated for sure. So I was really glad that she spoke out about that. And don't forget, Taylor had a whole thing with streaming in 2015.
Oh, yeah. I think it's really interesting that she's talking about it when she refused to put her music on streaming platforms.
I read an article about this somewhere. I forget where. But it was like Taylor Swift's convoluted history with Spotify. Like,
yeah.
It was like they literally, those two are like, I don't even, I'm trying to think of a metaphor, but they are just like
oil and water.
Yeah, they just have always had a weird relationship because now I feel like now she fully embraces them. Like people were,
it would be dumb for her not to. At this
absolutely,
point.
And that's what I always said. Like when her music wasn't on, I was like, patience, it will be, and sure enough, it was. But I think I read that article wherever, I think it might have been Music Biz Worldwide. Okay. That like Lover the song had just come out like a week before Lover the album, and there was a big, huge, giant billboard in Times Square from Spotify that with just like All's Well That Ends Well to end up with you. And the article was like, that lyric could apply to Taylor's relationship with Spotify because they fought, but in the end, they ended up together. And, you know, it's a really common thing for big artists when they have a big release to have that kind of Spotify billboard in Times Square. But for Taylor, it's like, don't forget, there's a huge history here. Like, there's a history. So it's just very interesting because, you know, she's speaking out so much now with the scooter thing that it's almost, you almost forget that merely 4 years ago, like 4 or 5 years ago, she was on a whole other thing.
Right.
So I just think it's important to remember, which I don't even know if we should go into that because that's just a whole other thing. But it's pretty like sorted out now, at least like for Taylor, like specifically, like on her individual level, obviously streaming in general, like you said, it's still the wild, wild west. The laws don't really make sense. We need them to be updated. But in terms of Taylor's relationship with them, it's pretty sorted out now.
Right. And I think it's also interesting that she talks about it in this speech that before she signed the record deal with Universal, she says, this was before my record deal with Universal last year that would contractually guarantee that the artists on their roster
would
be paid upon any sale of their Spotify shares unrecoupable.
Right.
So thank you for that.
Yeah.
So, So she, before that part in her speech, she's talking about the Scooter Braun thing. She's calling him out.
Yeah.
We've talked about it. We won't get back into it.
Yeah.
And then the next part, which I thought was really cute, was that she's talking about Billie Eilish.
Yes, that was like my favorite part.
And she says she, on her 25th birthday, she was talking about streaming and the importance of that and how the music industry is changing. And
it was like 2014, I think.
Right, and she wants to offer something to the younger women. And that was when she was Woman of the Year.
Yeah, she was Woman of the Year twice. And one of the times was in 2014 because like 1989 had come out. And her music still wasn't on Spotify. And that was before she wrote the open letter to Apple because it was before Apple announced Apple Music.
Apple Music. It was right before.
It was
they
right
announced
before.
It in 2015.
Exactly.
And so then she says, I've since learned that at that exact moment, an 11-year-old girl in California really was taking piano lessons and really was in a girls' choir because she talks about how she wants people, the younger generation of musicians, to be thriving. And then she says, and this year she has been named Woman of the Year at the age of 17. Her name is Billie.
Yeah, she was basically saying, like, hypothetically, when, you know, 5 years ago when she was 25, you know, right now your future Woman of the Year is in a girls' choir or taking piano lessons and we need to take care of her.
Right.
And it's just come full circle because at the time Billie was 11 and she actually was in a choir and she was taking piano lessons. And Billie said in her speech as Woman of the Year, she was like, you guys took care of me.
Right.
Which, it's really honestly, cute. Can I just say, Billie got so screwed over in this situation because all eyes were on Taylor because she's Woman of the Decade.
Right.
Usually the big deal is Woman of the Year.
But it's...
I totally called, by the way, that Billie would be Woman of the Year this year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's really cool. And then she just kind of goes into round out her speech. Saying that she loves that her fans connect to her music, and that she, in the coming, she's been focusing on herself and doing what she wants to do and focusing less on what people say that she can't do.
Right.
And then she thanks everyone, and it's really cute. And so we really liked this speech. The only thing we didn't like was that she calls out Scooter Braun during such... happy occasion.
Exactly. Yeah. It seems
it
like
felt inappropriate.
Yeah. The focus should have been on, you know, lifting women up, which she did for like 80% of the speech. And well, then there was just,
I think it should have been more about her achievements.
That too. Yeah.
It should have been like, yeah, I sold out multiple world tours. And yeah,
I can't hold all my Grammys at once.
Right. Yeah. I have more Grammys than I have fingers. Yeah. Like stuff like that. But it wasn't. And I really want to know
Jamila Jamil, I think.
Okay. Was standing towards the side of Taylor the entire time.
She looked like a robot. Like, she was not moving.
She is great.
It was kind of impressive.
She's on The Good Place. Love The Good Place.
Very, and she's actually, show. She's a huge advocate for women and for feminism, which is why I think they invited her on.
Right.
Like, she has that great organization, I Weigh, which is, you know, about, like, weighing yourself by your achievements rather than the number on the scale.
Cute.
She did a really great interview with Lizzo through
which
is how I think that was like how I got really into Lizzo. Like, I knew who Lizzo was,
right.
But when I saw that video, I was like, oh my God, she's amazing. But anyways, yeah. So I think that's why they had her on.
It was a 15-minute acceptance
speech. Yeah, exactly. Most acceptance speeches are much shorter.
Right. But it's understandable. So she was a woman of the decade.
Maybe she didn't know that she would be sitting there that
long. I just thought it was kind of funny.
I also thought, this is so stupid, I thought it was funny that Taylor gave her the award to say,
to
like,
hold.
I don't want this to slip, but, like, Jamila was wearing, like, a silk suit, and I kept thinking, it's going to slip. Anyways, that's
fine.
Stupid,
it's
but it did not slip.
It was a glass award.
Yeah, it was a glass award. It's going to look very beautiful on Taylor's mantle, but... yeah, so it was a really interesting night. People are still talking about it.
It's still trending on YouTube, the video,
which
of...
It's a good thing because people will click on it.
Right.
And that will raise awareness for women in the industry, and that's wonderful.
Right,
but
We
need to talk about our opinions.
Yeah, and it's a whole complicated mess of things, so I'm glad that we got it out and we talked about it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. We'll move into some... other, like, new things that happened this week. Harry Styles released Fine Line, his sophomore album.
Yesterday, right? Recording on December 14th.
Yes. On Friday the 13th, on Taylor Swift's 30th birthday, Harry Styles released Fine Line. And it might be my favorite album of the year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Coming in just under the buzzer.
Right. Well, okay, maybe not, because I haven't had a lot of time with it yet.
Oh, yeah.
That might be my second favorite album of the year, because...
What would be your first?
Maggie Rogers.
I knew that. Like, right as I asked, I was like, no, I already know.
Yeah, but that came out so early in the year that I kind of forgot that it came out this year.
They're almost a year apart.
Came out in January.
That's right, yeah.
I will say I really, really like... I liked all of the singles. I think all of the singles were released really timely.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the marketing plan for Adore You last week. Watermelon Sugar was so good. Just his presence this week has been on point. He was on James Corden. They did a concert in the middle of the sidewalk, which was hilarious. They did Spill Your Guts or Fill Your Guts with Kendall Jenner. And he's funny.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when they were younger and he was in One Direction and he was on iCarly, he was an awful actor. And now I think he's really come into his own. He's on Dunkirk. He did all the things.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Some of the tracks are really great. Some of the tracks are very sad. Still great. Falling made me cry at my desk.
Nice. We love that for you.
On the subway at my desk. Sunflower Volume 6, Baby Dance at my desk. Golden, also very great. I've been singing them, the songs, all the time. All the time, meaning yesterday and today. I do think I need more time with it, obviously. I've listened to it with any album. Right, I think I've listened to it 5 or 6 times, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it is because it came out yesterday.
Yeah. That's it?
That's it? Are you kidding me? Well, it came out yesterday. So, overall, big hairy girl. We'll do a catch-up in June when I see him.
Yeah, we will.
One of my friends works for Epic, and she went to the forum. Oh, and I was, like, living vicariously through her Instagram story.
That's fun.
Yeah. And he did a show. He did a one-night show at the Forum last night where he sang the album, which is a really great record release party, if you will. And Stevie Nicks came out on stage.
Really? I didn't know that.
The one and only Stevie Nicks. That's a big deal. It's a really big deal because she is his muse, basically.
Yeah.
And, like, his mentor.
And she loves him, right?
Yeah.
Of course, or else she wouldn't have come out.
There was a Fleetwood Mac show in L.A. that Harry did an interview for Rolling Stone during, like, when the show was happening, the same day or something.
Oh, gotcha.
And the interviewer was with them, maybe? There's a part where the interviewer is talking about sitting with Harry Styles, and Stevie Nicks shouts out Harry Styles and Harry Styles' mom.
Yeah.
I was like, that's really cute because Stevie Nicks really is old enough to be his, like, hip grandma.
Yeah. And you see the influence for sure.
Oh, in his fashion. Sure.
In his aesthetic and
in his
music.
In his sound. Very much so. Absolutely. And I don't know. It's so good. That's all I can say. Yeah. And obviously I'm a Harry Styles stan, so I feel like my opinion is going to be like, it's good no matter what.
Yeah.
But there is not one track that I don't like. I've not skipped one.
That's amazing.
One. I've skipped Falling when I was in public.
Yeah. I'll do that.
I was walking home from work. I went to Trader Joe's on my way home to get dinner. Falling came on, and I said, nope. I couldn't do
it. Why am I crying in Trader Joe's right now?
Nope, we're crying in the club.
Crying in the club.
So, yeah, I think it's really great. And obviously, there's going to be a lot of album reviews out that will do a better, more in-depth job than I will do on it. But if you haven't listened to it, listen to it. Like, Nicole hasn't listened to it.
Expose me.
Expose you. It's
fine. Well, I still have the deep-seated, like, 1D versus Justin thing.
Honestly,
which
it's
is so
fine.
Immature, but...
I'm over it. I listen to Justin.
I like Zayn.
Yeah. I think...
First album, excuse me.
All right.
Correction.
If I were to rank... One of the questions was rank the... James Corden was rank their solo... The solo careers of the band members.
Like, including himself?
No. But...
Okay.
But...
Kendall
Jenner didn't even get through the question.
Oh, like he knew?
He knew and he ate a scorpion, right? Because she started listing the band members.
Oh, gotcha.
So if I'm going to list, I will rank.
Yeah, do it.
Harry's first. Niall and Zayn are probably same plane, maybe. I think Zayn's first album was better. The Niall's album.
Yeah, absolutely. But, like, his second
album
like, brought the average down. Yeah.
Second album was a flop.
Yeah.
So, we'll say Harry, Zayn, Niall.
Does it even matter?
They're both bad.
They're both so bad.
Like, I can't even listen to Louis's solo
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, me either. Like, if I had to pick between, like, Harry and anybody, like, obviously I'd listen to Harry's before I'm listening to Liam or Louis. Like, no question.
And I just think that Liam's problematic right now.
Oh, absolutely.
Liam has been problematic. There was an interview where he said he wouldn't let Harry Styles babysit his son, Bear. First of all,
his son's name is Bear,
so I don't think he can make any... comments.
I read that headline and I was like, he means his hypothetical son? And then I was like, wait, he has a son. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just, mm-mm.
Yeah.
That's that.
I saw this video of him like performing.
Oh.
And it was the most bland thing ever. Like, he was performing Strip That Down. I think it was at some Jingle Ball thing. And someone quoted it and was like, he's walking like he's giving a TED talk. Like, he wasn't dancing. He was literally just like walking back and forth like
that
a windshield wiper. It was like really funny.
If we're on the topic of One Direction, Niall Horan took pictures in front of my office when he was in Philadelphia.
Big rip. It's still cool that he was in front of your office.
Yeah.
He wasn't in front of my office.
Well, if you go to the his post on Instagram in front of City Hall. He's on like the Broad Street side of City Hall.
Because it's like the prettiest part of Philly.
Yeah, and I work at on Broad Street, so.
Yeah.
He wasn't really in front of my office, but he was like in the vicinity.
Basically.
He was like within a minute's jaunt if the stoplights are in your favor.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
The next thing I wanted to talk about is Ariana Grande, because she is set to release a live album.
Oh. I was like, what about her?
Yeah.
Right.
So. Ariana is keeping the fans fed this year.
Always.
Obviously.
I don't know how she does it.
Yeah, I think she's a workaholic. It's very inspiring.
Yeah.
I want to be a workaholic.
No, you don't.
Okay, I take it back. but yeah, so she obviously released like Sweetener and Thank You Next within like 6 months.
Which is crazy.
And then did
a world tour.
And then did the Charlie's Angel
album.
Charlie's Angel soundtrack. Yeah. Yeah. Curated it and all that stuff. And then now she wants to put out a live album, which is really cool. And, she says that it's going to like have a title, which is like interesting because I thought it would just be Sweetener Live or something. But she says she was like
the Ariana Grande Experience.
I don't know. Maybe it's going to be something cutesy or whatever.
I'm the girl that's upside down on my album covers.
It's a little lengthy, don't you think? But yeah, so she says that the release date is coming soon and the title is coming soon. And I'm really excited for it. It's not really news yet. It's just kind of like anticipation. Right. I love Ariana. I was too broke to see her this tour, which is a shame because.
Well, it was at Wells Fargo, and Wells Fargo is an arm and a leg.
Well, yeah, any arena.
Yeah.
Because it's a big artist at an arena.
No, I know. But it's just so, like, my tickets for Harry were so expensive.
Yeah, that's just like par for the course.
I thought about that. I'll tell you something off this because I know he listens, but someone we know saw Ariana and had an extra ticket and I was in New York and I wasn't going to get back in time.
Yeah, that's a big rip.
Big rip.
Yeah. But, but yeah, I saw her first two tours and I was really bummed that I couldn't see this one. I want to save money for like if Justin comes back and he tours, because that's more important
to
me.
We'll talk about his, very elusive 2020 post.
Yes, let's talk about that next. So that's about it.
It's about it.
He just keeps posting 2020. Him and Scooter, both of them keep posting just 2020. But he also, like, he was writing it out for a while. Like, just he was tweeting it. But then next he posted, like, a picture of a graphic that said 2020. It was a video, asshole, with no sound. I thought it was going to be a snippet.
Well, he posted three still post
on Instagram, but on Twitter he posted a video, but it has no sound. It's just like 7 seconds of 2020.
Right. So he posted
and
three,
he made it his header.
Right. He did
as well.
That's what I saw. But he posted three, just square posts on Instagram, but the captions are all emojis.
He's fucking crazy.
Like, there's no. The first one has. I don't think has a caption. No. The first one has no caption. The second one doesn't have a caption either.
He does his own thing.
Yeah, none of them have captions. Now that I'm looking at them, I thought they were all like emojis. So
it's just comments.
Yeah,
no, they just don't have captions. Yeah.
So you know,
he's like, fuck it,
right?
But like,
what's coming 2020?
Also, something that's a little more subtle is that he kept posting pictures of his wonderful wife Hailey Baldwin or Hailey Bieber now on his Instagram story and was saying like, yummy. Which we thought was just like he thinks his wife is yummy,
but no, it's a title.
And so he retweeted something that he tweeted in June of 2013, which was a tumultuous time in his life and mine, because my life was his life. And it says, just ate a ton of fried Oreos, hashtag yum. And at first I was like,
wow, okay, relatable.
His thumb slipped and he retweeted something. But then I was like, wait, hashtag yum. So I definitely think there's something coming to do with yummy, which title kind of honestly makes me cringe, but like, we don't care about that. We only care about the actual music. So
no, and I shall see.
I've
heard that there's speculations that it's an album or a track.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
So
that it's like
the
first single or something.
Right. So if I've heard it, then you know.
Yeah. but he also tweeted once like how many days away is 2020. So that makes people think he's dropping something on like January 1st. Because that's
interesting.
How many days away, you know? So I really don't know. He's being super like cryptic right now. I'm just really happy because last night he was auctioning off some art for charity, and he at the event he sang like a cappella, just like a ton of songs, like Baby and Never Say Never, and Jaden Smith was there and he rapped.
Oh God, Jaden Smith.
And I was like, this is a throwback, and it was really cute, and his vocals sounded amazing. I was like a little nervous because he hasn't sung in a while, obviously, just chilling.
Well, he probably has.
Yeah, that's true. I guess just not publicly.
Just not to you.
That's true, maybe, yeah.
If he's dropped an album.
But he hasn't, like, performed in a while, is what I'm saying. And so I was, like, hearing his voice again made me really excited. And he also sang Rise and Shine because Kylie was there. And he got her to sing it because he's got power.
Weird.
So that was, like, weird. But I thought it was cute that he did it.
All right.
Because I think everything he does is cute.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Opinion.
I'll let you have it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I think, does that cover everything in the news?
Yeah, I think that's everything that we were going to talk about, like, opinions news-wise.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah, so that's what we've got for this week. We are going to go, even though we just started this podcast, we're going to go on a little hiatus.
Yeah, because the holidays are coming.
Because the holidays are coming. Your girl's going to be in Florida, getting nice and tan.
Very nice. I'm going to be in Florida too, but for my grandma's 90th birthday.
Right. So maybe a little tan. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
And then we'll be back, in January.
In 2020.
In 2020.
In the next decade.
We could have a new Justin release.
I might be dead because I'll be freaking out that Justin's released. Right. Or maybe I'll be really disappointed. It's going to be one of those.
And then we will have some Grammy Awards. We'll have some Grammy nominations.
Yeah, we'll have some Grammy discussion.
Grammy discussion, probably pre and post.
Yes, definitely.
Because that's a big deal. Our resident Grammy expert, Nicole P. Weinstein.
That's me. Yeah, I'm obsessed with the Grammys. I was a seat filler last year. We'll go into it.
We'll get
probably
into
the
it.
Next time you hear from us.
Yeah, so, yeah. You know. So, you know, like, subscribe, hit the bell notification.
Hit the bell, yeah, no. Subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review. That would be super cool.
Yeah.
Again, this is for a senior project, so we would love any support we could get.
Make the review, make a review, and because I'm the only review on the Apple podcast right
now.
Yeah,
I haven't even done one. I need to
do one. Reviewed it. I gave it 5 stars, so everyone else can give it 5 stars, and you can call me out that my review is the only one, but please don't do that.
We don't care as long as you give us 5 stars.
Yeah, just give us 5 stars.
You can say whatever you want.
Not that hard.
Tell us your opinion.
You can give us an opinion on Taylor Swift in... Don't do that, actually. Don't do that. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, and you can like us on Facebook, and you can follow us on Instagram, Popinions Pod and Popinions Podcast, respectively. And we will hear you. Well, you will hear us in the new year. We won't hear
you.
Yeah.
In the new year.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
What the what's next? Go and cash your bad checks.
You got a white dick in your pocket. You lost it. Cash in, cash out while you still can. So you waste time on your big dream, then you get scammed by a TV. Drop in, drop out, it's a good plan. Soft call, summer tan, racking up debt. Now I can't come back in a cold sweat. So what you gonna do? Don't cash a bad check. We're down and out, baby. I don't care. I wanna feel like a millionaire. So let's get to it. Ain't nothing wrong. What's next? Don't cash a bad check.
What's next? Don't cash a bad check.
Kids try to act mean, crawling through the city on the hands and knees. You spent a bad year in the wrong bed. Start a new life where you play dead. But nothing's ever easy.
in a debt. Now I can't come back in a cold sweat. So what you gonna do next?
Go and cash a bad check.
We're down and out, baby, I don't care.
Checking account number ready when you call.
Cash your bad checks.